of green.
Hello, this is Ed Cohen, editor of Global Business News and your broadcast host of a Global Radio Talk Show. Today, coming to you from Old Town in San Diego and Washington, D.C. Our special guest today is Elizabeth Liz Stern, a partner in Mayor Brown, Washington, D.C. office and a member of their employment and benefits group. Liz Stern has over 25 years of experience advising on U.S. and global immigration, HR, and mobility services, and is consistently ranked as a leading reference business immigration lawyer by Chambers Global, Chambers USA, Who's Who Legal, International Who's Who of Business Lawyers, and more. Let's welcome Liz Stern.
Hi, Ed. How are you?
Just great. Thanks very much for being my guest today. Liz, you focus on issues that are unique to dynamic commercial entities with a global workforce. So what are some of the trends you are seeing, the trends that global companies are seeing where their employees are being assigned today?
Well, it's a dynamic age, Ed. Nowadays, it is not so much about employees being assigned to any one location. It's much more about them being up in the air and on the go, moving to where the next business need is.
I see. This takes into consideration global HR, global HR disciplines and transactions, including all kinds of compliances like work visas, work permits, compliances on how immigration transactions interface with tax, employment, comp, and ben. It's a huge task, isn't it?
It really is. What we're really seeing is that nowadays the economy is globally interdependent, and for a company to compete effectively, they have to operate in so many locations. I was just talking with a company today that the company itself is in about 40 countries, but they're performing services in 150 for customers. So obviously, since they don't have premises in all of those 150 countries, they're moving workers from their hubs into those countries and back out frequently. It's just a constant wheel. And that brings about all kinds of issues from basic employment authorization all the way to risks such as whistleblower risk, big regulatory compliance risk, data security, even corruption risk, because immigration filings, of course, go through agencies in different countries.
Okay, so we just talked about companies that are based somewhere and sending people into other places, but not necessarily having a facility on the ground in those places. So that encompasses business travel. And so what's the risk of business travel today?
The risk is not only that the individuals won't be allowed in, but that they might get pulled out of those countries and the company might be subject to very severe sanctions, even criminal sanctions. We've seen that in countries as mature as the United States and as emerging, immature economies that are evolving in Africa, Asia, and Latin America. So the company really needs to become sensitized to this new era where having people just get in there on a visitor passport or visa could create tremendous risk reputationally for the company and financially.
Okay, so before we get into solutions, let's just further define the tenure of the assignments, move from long-term normal assignments to other things. Would you like to get into that and describe that a little bit?
Sure. A lot of times when I started doing this, 25 years ago, companies would talk about what is probably the classic expatriate assignment, which is a long-term assignment where an employee from the parent company's main country, let's just say it's the United States, is assigned for a year to 3 years in a foreign country to help develop business there. That was the classic expatriate assignment. Today, in addition to those classic assignments of an expatriate, where an expatriate is seconded, they're given a special expatriate assignment contract known as a secondment. In addition to that, there might be employees that really are commuting from the home country into that destination country. There might be employees that are splitting their time between 3 or 4 different locations, and they might not even all be in the same continent. It simply is what the purview of their duties are. There might be employees that are really at the executive level or management level, and they're overseeing development operations in an entire region. So they might be assigned to the entire Eastern Europe region and have 10 countries that they're responsible for, and they're coming across that border again and again. They are a type of business traveler, but in a way they're also a short-term worker. How to figure out what the tax rules are, what the immigration rules are, and what the employment contract really needs to say for those types of short-term travelers in and out of countries is the most challenging part for companies today.
Well, thank you. So in the news recently, there have been some companies merging with American companies, merging with offshore companies, and then moving to another location to avoid tax. So this certainly mixes things up a little bit about who's working for whom and how do you get paid and with whom and how. But more so, what about the aspect of the GEC, the Global Employment Company, when it comes to some kind of a holding situation wherein employees are really not working for one company, but they're working for an offshoot in order to avoid some of these transactional issues? And how does that relate to the government's cracking down? And if you could extend that to why the governments are taking such an aggressive stance.
Sure, Ed. Well, the Global Employment Company, the GEC, is a vehicle that was originally developed by probably some very smart tax attorneys precisely for what you said, to be essentially a shell, a holding entity to payroll and really in name only employ, i.e. supervise, control, have reporting authority over employees that are assigned to different global locations. So if you have, for example, a big U.S. company, rather than having that U.S. company expose itself to corporate tax and other liabilities in all these other countries that it's functioning in, it would try to shield itself from that kind of tax exposure and liability through the GEC. And it's still a very favored type of vehicle for that precise reason, to shield the big revenue producer, the giant company that is in one big country. That's really how the GEC works and why people use it. The reality is that, as you just noted, the enforcement arm of local governments everywhere in the world is changing. The GEC is not a new idea, and countries that are emerging into the world economy want to have their ability to develop tax revenues, to have their own rule of law, to have their own constitutional and compliance systems that govern who is within their shores. And they also often want to regulate how many people come in from other countries because they're trying to elevate their own nationals to become a higher educated, higher performing, higher income group of workers. So all of those trends, both the what we would think of as protectionist trends, but in a way for emerging economies, are really the developmental trends of a country that is now becoming more financially and commercially viable and more politically stable, are at work in having that enforcement arm reach out and say, just because you're employed by a GEC doesn't mean that we're not going to regulate people simply because they are operating within our shores. And no matter what, the nature of the activity and the length of time that people spend in the country are going to influence how susceptible they are to liability within that country.
All of this comes full circle back to the concept of Western universities, particularly in the U.S., educating the leaders today of these emerging economies, and then they go back with all the knowledge and the contacts of how to do things. After all, America built the global economy, and now we're dealing with it with 20th century rules and regs in many locations, but we're here headlong into the 21st century, and now we're having to deal with this, yet we seem to have shackles on us to with the immigration problem today. Would you like to comment on that?
Sure. I mean, it's a very valid point that essentially what we're doing when we talk about how important it is to attract the best and the brightest, and then what's happening in terms of our own brain drain, right? All of the mature economies, we're all talking about that. The reality is, by having immigration policies that are restricted, have outdated quotas, suspicious, I should say, of educated professionals having legitimate job opportunities within their shores, we're just instilling a motivator for foreign students to go back to their home country and enrich their home country. And at that same time, their home countries are doing everything possible to bring them back. The part that is so telling is that now it isn't only the foreign students in the mature economies that are going back home to their newly emerging birthplace. It is now the natives and the graduates of the home country schools themselves. So you see, for example, top-level American master's students and PhDs heading into Africa, heading into India, China. It's old news at this point, because there are opportunities to work in emerging business, in infrastructure, in areas that are in growth mode where there is less jobs growth, less natural development within the established economies. Very interesting trend, very dangerous
right.
trend.
But probably a lot of fun for the leaders. they're making things happen and probably financially benefiting in a big way.
No question about it. I mean, you know, this is our business, and we see executives that are functioning at so many different levels, and they started functioning at a fairly junior part of their career, and they're loving it. And it is very interesting. They often see the U.S. or the U.K. as a tour of duty rather than as a landing spot. And they grew up here.
Yeah.
And they can see that landing in that great China or Singapore job is actually going to yield much greater benefits, both financially and even culturally. It's stimulating for them.
Just last night on the evening news, I don't know which station it was. I think it was CNBC, National Business Report or something like that. There was a piece about Chinese citizens, wealthy Chinese business people, buying property in a lot of places, but in particularly in California, to park some money, of course, and also to establish residency for the benefit of securing access to the University of California and other institutions geared for residents. So that, number one point. Number two point, the EB-5. So how does this relate to the Chinese and other big money people?
I think that one is a slightly different issue. For high net worth foreign nationals, they often still find that having some piece of their investment in countries like the United States and Western countries is just a good option, if nothing else, for that education, that student program for their children or even their grandchildren. And while they themselves will continue to live abroad, having that ability to maintain some sort of residency in these mature economies will ultimately, they feel, allow them to have their children be educated, or as I said, their grandchildren. The EB-5 is the United States version of something that exists all over the world, which is an investment that allows foreign nationals who are high net worth to obtain residency, to be authorized to stay. The idea behind it is that you want to attract that wealth and to create new enterprises and new jobs in the home country. In the U.S., that program has had controversy since its inception in 1990, because there's kind of a distaste in our still perhaps Calvinist work ethic type society of buying your way into a residency. But in reality, it's a commercial tool that most countries use, and the important thing is to ensure that it's being used in a way that actually does stimulate the economy, that it isn't a securities violation or some sort of fraud where some broker is really collecting the money and not allowing it to enrich different regions that need it within the U.S.
So as we come to a close here, a couple of more questions. Focus in for a sec on what areas do companies need to monitor to avoid big risks as this mobility pace and volume increases and spreads to new markets?
Yes, I think the main thing is, the first thing is that they have to monitor to begin with who's going where and how they are aware in a central location, whether it be within the legal department or the HR department, what is happening with their workforce. Because we think companies have grown so quickly across so many locations that sometimes the local management by the office manager or the HR in the local office are the only ones that really know who's coming in and moving jobs and changing around. And those liabilities are just too high risk not to have a more central monitor enterprise-wide. But the risks to really watch out for are both the fundamental and the high impact. The fundamental are these people in country with an appropriate work authorization, both from an immigration and an employment point of view? Do they have the right employment contract? Have they limited employment liability within that employment contract and provided from the get-go that there's an exit strategy for when the tour of duty ends? Those are the fundamentals. The non-fundamental, the high impact risk to look at is to ensure that there is a true oversight of how people assimilate into the country so you don't get problems of misperception that can lead to whistleblowers claiming that fraud has occurred or to actual security issues because you have a Westerner, for example, developing an alcoholism problem in an Asian country where alcohol consumption is much higher. Maybe they work for a company that develops infrastructure and that would be particularly dangerous. And then also corruption issues. Really need to take a look to ensure that as the person moves into the country, there aren't bribes being paid by some third-party agent that the company's using they don't even realize is engaged in that kind of behavior.
Thank you. Liz, now tell us about the firm, Mayer Brown.
We are a global firm with a presence at all of the major financial centers, and one of our missions is really to develop a global people solution for our clients because we think that companies need help having an oversight over what's happening in their far-flung global operations, and we've developed a centrally managed program in the people area specifically using technology, using some lead partners in different regions, and using some of the very sophisticated project management type of approaches to track and report what is happening with people all over the world and to be able to have an early warning system for risk. And that's why I'm here at Mayer Brown and enjoying it tremendously.
Well, thank you very much. There's so much to learn from you and about the different structures for expatriate assignments and the packages for expatriates and best practices or next practices. I look forward to having more time with you in the future, and I, of course, am very happy to welcome you to our faculty for the National Press Club event on October 28. Thank you, Liz, for being my guest today on Global Radio Talk Show.
Thank you, Ed. It's my pleasure.
Thank you. This is Ed Cohen signing off from Old Town in San Diego.
What a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself.